You are listening to the cycling podcast at the Giro d'Italia in association with Rafa. Today we are in Tortoli.
Cozze ci tene, cozze, cozze vicine, non spigudeci ora, non spigudeci ora. Cozze ci tene, cozze, cozze vicine, non spigudeci ora, se non mangiano le femmine.
It's a shame because he was in a very good position and it's another opportunity lost. I was more surprised by how the day was raced, actually. You know, if you saw the today stage, it could have a lot of things could have happened today, and they didn't. I know it's early in the tour, but I think we averaged 36 kilometres an hour for a 6 hour plus stage. It was a pretty cruisy day because it could have been a lot tougher. Tomorrow it's going to be very, very windy from the start. I haven't checked in the last few hours, but the cross tailwind from the start, so it's going to be an action packed day tomorrow. So it finishes with a headwind, but a lot of fast riding on the coast tomorrow.
To be honest, I can't exactly remember, but I don't know if it was Greipel or Garaviria that I kind of bumped into. When I bumped into them, my foot came out of the pedal, and obviously at that point in the race, it's going to be pretty hard to get your foot back and you keep sprinting. So yeah, I'm devastated, to be honest.
Hello, my name's Richard Moore. I'm with Daniel Freeb.
Hello.
And Lionel Burney.
Hello.
And we were played in there by Matt White and Caleb Ewan. Well, you spoke to them, Daniel, at the finish.
Oh, look, mate. First one of the Giro. Oh, look. I was going to challenge him to do an interview.
Matt White,
without
this is.
Saying look, without prefacing it with look. But, you know, it's charming, isn't it?
Did he not hear our look mashup that one
I'm
of our
sure.
producers
I,
did?
I
we should
that
play
tomorrow.
That to him.
Anyway, Lionel, where are we? Where are we? We're in, what's the name of this village? Baunai.
We're in a lively bar.
How many foreigners live in Baunai? How many non-Italians? I know this because I just looked it up. 27. It's 27. There are two people from the United Kingdom live here.
I thought I said it was really? 46.
Yeah. 22 Germans, the rest are Romanians.
Where on earth do you find out that data?
I don't know.
That's ridiculous. Well, there's 30 tonight because we're here. There may well be other foreigners here as well, enjoying the Giro here in Sardinia. It's
well, Giro went through
it?
Here, didn't it? The Giro went through this little hilltop village. It's beautiful, it's stunning.
Just at the start of the final descent, in fact, I think about 20, 30 kilometres to go.
Lots of pink balloons, pink bunting.
Pink bunting. Well, what's Mauro Venni's view on bunting? We know Christian Prudhomme very keen on bunting from the Tour's visit to Yorkshire. Mauro Venni's views on bunting as yet unknown. We perhaps should find out over the...
It's not really a Giro thing, is it, bunting? I like the way you're attempting to plug the cycling podcast Italiano, which launched today. Our interview with Mauro Venni,
in which
controversially he kind of lets slip that he finds the Tour de France really boring, and he has it on in the corner of his office. And he glances at the screen every now and again, but generally only watches the last few kilometres. Which, to be honest, you could have got away with watching only a few kilometres.
Has he been watching
today?
The Giro the last couple of days? Because it's not got off to the most riveting start.
I did enjoy the cycling podcast Italiano, Daniel. I should warn that it is in Italian, but you pronounced my name incorrectly. How did you introduce me in that?
Lionel Birni.
I can't even remember.
I mean, it's much more sort of southeast England estuary type Lionel Burney. That's how it's said. Please keep it, you know. Get it right.
Let's just hope that the Italian versus cycling podcast doesn't get more listeners than the regular one.
Any danger of that.
That could be a problem. Anyway, we should put the interviews we heard at the start from Caleb Ewan and Matt White in some kind of context. And to do that, Lionel Burney, can you give us the Lionel Bim? Can you give us the tale of the tapper, please?
The tale of the tapper. The tale of the tapper here in Italy, in Sardinia. Stage 2, Olbia to Tortoli. It was 206 kilometres. It was into mostly a headwind, so it was a slow old day. 6 hours and 5 minutes in the saddle. Pretty formulaic day. 5 riders got away. Daniel Tekle-Heimanot of Dimension Data was in the break for the second day in a row. He was the only World Tour rider. The other 4, Lucas Alcian, Ilya Kostyuk.
The chap that you pulled out in your Panini stickers yesterday, wasn't it?
The chap I pulled out in the Panini stickers yesterday, Ilya Koshevoy of Willia, Simone Andrita of Bardiani, and Evgeny Shalinov of Gazprom. And they got about 5.5 minutes up the road. It was gradually reeled in very, very slowly. It was like watching paint dry slowly, very slowly.
It was like
slowly.
Watching that squid ink that you had creosoted on your plate last night dry.
It's always a headwind in Sardinia, isn't it? It doesn't matter what direction you're going in, it's always a headwind.
Tomorrow not, apparently. Apparently tomorrow tailwind. It's going to be very fast tomorrow.
I take it back then.
So they were left out there until the final main climb, the Genesilana. 47 kilometres to go. They were all back in the bunch. It split up a little bit on that descent. There were a couple of little skirmishes, but nothing really to talk of. And then we had the big bunch sprint. Andre Greipel, the German champion, won the stage. I think that means he's won a stage of every Grand Tour he's ridden since 2008. He has the pink jersey for the first time in his career and possibly the last opportunity he had to take that. He was helped largely by Caleb Ewan pulling his foot out of his pedal at the precisely the wrong moment, and Greipel won the stage, dispossessed Lukas Pöstlberger of the pink jersey. Pöstlberger now has the white jersey. Greipel has pink and Ciclamino, and Tekla Heimanot has the Blue Mountains jersey.
About, you said not much happened, like not much to speak of, but Zakarin lost time, didn't he?
He did indeed, yeah. Ilnur Zakarin had a puncture with around about 7.5 kilometres to go. The Katusha leader had all of his teammates drop back to try and pace him back up to the peloton. We think they got back in touch, and then there was a further split, and he's lost 20 seconds. So he's had a worse day today than Steven Krauswijk had yesterday.
It was an impressive effort by Katusha to marshal their troops so quickly and efficiently at such a point in the race, I thought, and they did well to get him back on. But if you're at the back of the bunch in a finish like that, and there was a tailwind just before the finish, every chance of a little split happening there, and it only needs a little split and you've lost 20 seconds. We went and stood by the side of the road, didn't we, Lionel, in the final kilometer just to watch the race go past. And it's always good to watch the race go past. You really get a real sense of the speed, and we saw the Katusha guys, having just got Zakarin back on, sitting up, their job done. It's always good to just stand by the road and watch it pass.
Yeah, and it did give you that sense that those Katusha riders came past, a couple of them on their own and then another couple in a group further back. They would have been alert to the danger. They would have gone back. They really would have worked very, very hard for a short space of time.
Absolutely knackered, yeah.
They did look knackered, covered in, you know, spittle and sweat. They would have got back to the would have got back to the bus and found that their work was in vain because Zakarin lost that time
because
anyway.
What they were closing was a 20-second gap for much of the time.
Yeah, I mean, yesterday we saw Krauswijk lose seconds, 13 seconds, Zakarin 20 today. I'm still inclined to believe that this is not going to matter too much. I think you're going to be able to count the time gaps with a calendar, not a stopwatch, by the time we get to Milan. And I just think so much is going to happen over the course of these 3 weeks, with so many difficult stages, so many contenders, so many people in the shake-up. So I wouldn't be too concerned. But we heard from Matt White at the start of the program pod episode. What do we call it these days? Anyway, we heard from him at the start. What you didn't hear him say in response to the news that Zakarin lost time was, look, mate. Oh, look, we'll take that. There's 20 seconds we don't have to get back, mate, in the time trial. Look.
Well, because they've got Adam Yates, of course, as well for the overall. And Caleb Ewan, was there some contact with Fernando Gaviria in the finish that caused his foot to maybe come out, which is an unusual thing to happen?
Yeah, I think there was. I mean, he was certainly very aggrieved, Caleb Ewan. When he got back to the bus, he was upset. He was slightly upset with, well, not really upset with a mechanic, but he was certainly a bit irritable and asked, you know, whether there was anything they could do to the pedal to stop that happening in future, his foot coming out. I mean, I just feel that Caleb Ewan has been quite unlucky quite often over the past few months. I've been at several races where things have gone wrong in the finale in the last kilometre or so, and I think today was one of those occasions. He is going to win a lot of Grand Tour stages, and it's only a matter of time, especially when you look at the ages of the riders that dominate sprint finishes at the moment and where they are in the trajectory of their career. Greipel, Cavendish and Kittel, and today was more evidence that Gaviria is perhaps not to be considered. Well, I don't think he's the heir to any of those riders yet. He might become that, but I think there are still question marks over Gaviria. And I think Caleb Ewan is the one who has the most sort of credible credentials as the guy who's going to inherit the mantle of a Cavendish or a Kittel or a Greipel.
Today was a great chance for him to take a pink jersey as well, though. Of course, he missed out on that. It's not perhaps, there's not a stellar field of sprinters here at the Giro. I mean, Gaviria expected more from him. He faded today. And the guy who popped up in third was a surprise to me, certainly Jasper Stuyven, the Belgian rider at Trek Segafredo, more better known as a classic specialist, won Kern and Brussels Kern last year and was fourth in Paris-Roubaix this year, of course. I spoke to Stuyven at the finish and just asked him about his newfound bunch sprinting prowess.
Very good performance today. I don't think we had you down as a bunch sprinter. How did you get involved in today's finish?
Well, I've done quite a lot of bunch sprints if I get the chance, and I can say I'm almost always up there. Instead of finishing maybe 7th and 8th the past years, I'm able to finish now 3rd and 4th. And maybe when there's luck, or when it's a little bit harder, I can finish 1st.
How far away were you today, did you feel, from winning? You know, was there a moment where you maybe thought the stage win was on?
No, not really. Because with 1K to go, I was actually too far. And then I did a good sprint, but I never had the feeling I was able to sprint for the win. For me, actually, the weather was not good, because with the headwind made it easy today, and I was hoping for a harder climb to drop the fastest guys, but that didn't happen, unfortunately.
We are listening to the cycling podcast at the Giro d'Italia, supported by Science in Sport. Science in Sport, fueled by science.
Yesterday was a bit disappointing, and today was wonderful. Andre's in pink, pretty in pink, he's going to be. So, and it's extra special when you see the whole team working for it, all up there, and it's a team effort. And Andre, you know, we give him the opportunity to sprint, and he sprints and wins.
He had a couple of moments off the back with his bike. Do you know what any of those issues were about?
That I don't know. He did have some problems. He had a bike change, that's all I knew. I was a bit worried because he was riding his Helium, that's a climbing bike. And just, you know, mentally for cyclists, when he has to go on his spare, and his spare bike's a more stiffer frame. In the sprint, it's better. In the climbing, okay, it's more heavy. So I thought mentally, you know, it might crack him. But if he's there in the final on his nose, it's even better.
In terms of a day like today, when it was, you know, 6 hours in the saddle, it was quite a slow average speed. I'm sure it wasn't easy out there, but there's a lot of mental work to do. You've got to keep patient, got to make sure everybody's in the right place. I mean, how challenging is it on a day like today?
Mentally, it was really hard. Physically, it wasn't so bad. It's not so difficult, but just with the headwind, and, you know, and it's a long stage. It was even longer because of the headwind, and just, yeah, like you said, it was 6 hours and 12 minutes. The sports director had to keep reminding us, okay, guys, longer than normal, eat more, drink more, you know, because we do forget. Like, I was looking down thinking, damn, it's already 4 hours, you know, and I haven't eaten so much. So, yeah, so mentally it's kind of tough.
We heard there from Adam Hansen, a Lotto Soudal teammate of the stage winner André Greipel, of course, riding his umpteenth consecutive Grand Tour. Lionel spoke to him at the finish. Before that, Science and Sport, thank you very much indeed to them for sponsoring the cycling podcast. A reminder that you can get 20% off all Science and Sport products if you enter the code CPOD20 at the checkout at scienceandsport.com. And I mentioned last night we've got some nutrition-focused features coming up during the Giro, so listen out for them. But you spoke to you were hanging around the Lotto Soudal team bus, Lionel. You know them well, of course, from your French special over the winter when you went to the winter training camp Lotto Soudal and did a very entertaining interview with Adam Hansen, very revealing, far more revealing than he often is, I find, at races, where he does tend to be quite shut down and quite focused. When he gets back to the bus, he's quite keen to get on the bus rather than linger and speak to journalists.
It was very low-key round at the buses, wasn't it, today? They were all spread out. There weren't a huge number of riders coming back. I suspect they were all staying in town, so a lot of them will have ridden back from the finish line and not come back to the bus. But Adam Hansen was one of the riders who did come back to the bus. And the two things that were interesting about what he said was obviously the disappointment from yesterday, where all the sprinters, including Greipel, lost out to Pöstlberger's moment of initiative where he clipped off the front. They wanted to put that right today. And it was a tough day for the teams that had a sprinter because it was a headwind, it was a long day, Adam said it was sort of mentally quite challenging just to keep focused. And Greipel had a couple of bike changes. He started a stage on his climbing bike, finished it on his sprinting bike. That may well have been the plan anyway, but the changeover wasn't done at the time that they would have ideally planned. It was done when the climbing still had a fair bit of climbing still to go. So, you know, they had it all pretty well gripped and sorted. And he made the point also that the sprinters don't always get a great chance to take the pink jersey in the Giro. I know Marcel Kittel's had it the last couple of years, but often when it starts with a time trial or a team time trial or with a hilly stage very early on, this little run of stages has given them the opportunity to get Greipel into pink for the first time in his career.
22nd Grand Tour stage win, I think it was, I counted up.
Yeah, and they desperately needed a result, Lotto Soudal, because they've not had a good start to the season at all. Not the first time that they have struggled in the early part of the season. But Greipel really is a class act, isn't he? We mentioned his record earlier. Since 2008, he's won a stage in every Grand Tour, which is just phenomenal. But just also, as a guy, as a personality, I think he's someone who we've got to know over the years, and we've learned to appreciate over the years. But you know, you speak to other riders and they really don't have a bad word to say about him. You know, we know that Mark Cavendish is struggling at the moment with illness, with his Epstein-Barr virus, and he has not been training an awful lot, and obviously struggling to make it for the Tour de France. And I know that Greipel sent him a message recently just encouraging him. And you speak to Greipel's first coach in Rostock in the north of Germany, Peter Sager, and he was also Jan Ulrich's coach. And Jan Ulrich, probably the more famous of the two, won the Tour de France in 1997. But Peter Sager will say, well, yeah, Jan was a great guy, but Greipel really is a sort of different caliber of person, in that he's incredibly generous and has not forgotten where he's come from, has not forgotten the people that took him to that level, his first coaches, his family, his friends and so forth. So he has been a real credit to, well, certainly his team and the sport over the last few years.
Yeah, you say that, Daniel, about Lotto. They haven't had the best of springs, other than right at the very start. They were doing well in sort of Mallorca.
They were doing well in
the very early stages of the season. But the classics where...
You should explain that. I mean, can you...
Tim Wellens.
Yeah.
Well,
just, yeah, you know, well, and then some explanation.
Well, everyone listening knows who Tim Wellens is, surely.
Yeah, but, you know, some... Well, not everybody.
Well... Yeah, they were doing very Tim Wellens, the Lotto Soudal rider, earlier on in the season.
That's fair.
But the classics were a bit of a letdown for them. And with Greipel, though, they have got somebody who's very, very reliable. And, you know, we saw last year in the Giro when they won three stages in a row, Greipel won a couple either side of a win by Tim Wellens. And then Greipel picked up another stage win later in the race. You could see Bart Leysen, when he came back, that's the sports director or director sportif, he came back and he said that after yesterday's disappointment, it was just a case of recalibrating and doing exactly what they planned to do today anyway without taking into account yesterday's disappointment. So nothing changed about the plan. They weren't going to get lulled into maybe setting the pace when the brake got caught with 47 kilometres to go, because that was a nervous point in the race. It could have got very aggressive. It didn't really, because of the headwind. But there would have been more pressure on, say, Lotto Soudal and perhaps Orica to keep it together. But they weren't going to get drawn into that. And they just stuck to the plan, guided Greipel into position for the finale and let him do the rest.
We sort of take Greipel for granted a little bit, don't we? You know, he's quite a downbeat, underwhelming sort of character in when he wins. You know, he's not somebody who'll walk into press conference and set it on fire. I wonder what he's paid. I mean, I wonder what... Because you think about it, not only the wins that he brings in the Grand Tours, he does a great job for the team in race like Tour Flanders, which, you know, Paris-Roubaix as well this year, he was up there in the top 10. I would imagine he's paid the same as a Grand Tour contender who probably never gets near a Grand Tour podium. I'm thinking of several candidates out there who are paid quite a lot of money to, on the you know, the with the possibility that they might finish on the podium of a Grand Tour? Bakka Mollema or somebody like that?
Yeah, well, I mean, he'll be 35 later this year. It's contract year. I don't know whether that has been resolved yet with Lotto Soudal or whether he will be moving on. But I do know that picked up the vibe at the training camp back in December that Greipel really wanted to get on with contract negotiations to extend. And the team were maybe just kind of keeping their cards closer to their chest and they weren't willing to sit down at that point. You know, this could be an important win in terms of just reassuring Lotto that he's still able to bring home the bacon at this level. But the other thing, the big thing is, if he wins tomorrow, will Bart Lason shave his head? Because last year he shaved his head completely bald. He said after they'd won two in a row, that he would shave his head completely bald if they won three, and they did, and he went through with that. I asked him at the finish whether he had anything planned, and he said he'd wait and see if Andre Greipel won tomorrow before coming up with some kind of stunt. So we'll wait and see.
Hey, it's Elena Cecchini, rider from Canyon SRAM team, and you are listening to the Cycling Podcast in association with Rafa. My favorite item of clothing is how they designed my national champion jersey. So I really like how they did my white jersey with the three stripes. You can really see it in the peloton, and I like when the people recognize me.
The Rafa Cycling Club is the largest global community of its kind. Members share their passion for the road through rides, events, exclusive club kits, and racing. Find out more at rafa.cc.
Thank you very much indeed to our main sponsors, Rafa. We heard there from Elena Cecchini, Italian national champion last 3 years, actually. Elena Cecchini rides for Canyon SRAM. And, we're very grateful indeed to Rafa for their sponsorship. And a reminder, as I said in last night's podcast, that best place to watch the Giro, if you're near a Rafa clubhouse, and there are lots of them all over the world, is to go and watch it there. And they're doing lots of... Playing lots of activities around the Giro while it's on. Now, the highlight of my day was probably breakfast this morning, watching Lionel like a child in a toy shop or a sweet shop, maybe it's a more appropriate comparison, opening his Panini stickers and feverishly sticking them in his Panini album with a couple of under 10-year-old children at the next table and breakfast.
In fact, on the front of the album, there is a strap which says something like ideas for kids or great entertainment for kids.
I mean, these kids were completely bemused by this, because they were obviously, they just thought, I didn't think, you know.
Middle-aged men playing with a sticker album. Yeah, they looked
at... Middle-aged man, hang on.
Richard joined in as well. He did some of the stickers. Hang on. So I know you're keeping a sort of cool, aloof distance from the Panini sticker
putting
album.
Putting himself in a different generation
as well.
I'm also
in a different age bracket, but anyway, carry on.
Only just, Daniel, only just. The low light of my day has been our inability to find anywhere in Sardinia stocking Panini stickers. We stopped at services on the
breakfast. Tomorrow is not going to be quite as much fun, is it?
No, well, we'll have to get some in.
Yeah, we will.
Tortoli tomorrow morning.
Well, the other thing that's caught my eye today has just been the incredible response on social media to a request last night.
I think more people voted in this than voted in the French general election, didn't
well,
they?
Well, that's coming up, Daniel. That's coming on Sunday. But we're not. We're steering clear of politics, but. But yes, we asked last night whether people wanted the shark's tail to return, and overwhelmingly they do. One person said no.
The main reason for people wanting the shark's tail reinstated is that in the hope that we will get sued for use of the Jaws theme tune without any rights and get put out of business.
Don't flag it up, Daniel. Anyway, without further ado, let's have tonight's first installment of this Giro of the Shark's Tail.
Fidati di me se ti dico che sarai fra gli eletti. Trust me if I tell you that you'll be one of the chosen ones.
So there we have it, the first installment of the Shark's Tail. It's almost poetic. It suddenly got very windy, like a storm is coming. But that was a shark sale. Stand by for nightly installments of that. Wonderful. It's great to hear it again, Daniel. Wonderful. Nibali, anyway. Nibali.
Well, Nibali.
It's based, I mean, you're taking extracts there, we should explain for new listeners, of Vincenzo Nibali's autobiography, which is not called The Shark's Tale.
No, it's not. His long-forgotten autobiography. Nibali, interesting to see Bahrain Merida on the front today, kind of forcing the pace over the climb, and we wondered at one point whether that was to maybe put some pressure on his rivals, or you know, maybe to attack on the descent, or just to keep Nibali out of trouble. It's going to be interesting to watch him over the next few days. We're obviously going to Sicily. He is native of Sicily, and I know the team is slightly worried about there being a bit of a circus around Nibali, and they've had a lot of requests for him to go to, you know, cafes and drink granita, which is a typical Sicilian thing for the camera, for cameras and for news crews and so forth, and they've refused everything. They've really sort of they're trying to insulate him from all of that. But one thing that caught my eye in the press yesterday was Nibali, I think in La Gazzetta, was talking about the time trials in this Giro. And he's only ridden 3 time trials so far this year. 2 of them have been on normal bikes. And of course, the new bike this year, Merida, are supplying that team's bike. So he's not... That might be a bit of a concern. In fact, it is a concern for the team that he hasn't got a lot of experience of riding on his new bike this year. But
he's not made the mistake they made at the Tour in 2012 of thinking one of them's a team time trial, has he?
And he's got the mascot on his side. He's got Il Falco that we found out today from Brent Copeland, the manager there, that the mascot, the huge bird, the big bird outside Bahrain Merida's 2 buses is called Il Falco, or Falco, it's a falcon. And they've brought it to the Giro because they think it will get kids interested and it will become a bit of an attraction at the team bus in the morning. And the 2 buses, I also got the story behind why they've brought 2 buses here, and that's really an idea that Brent Copeland has brought from MotoGP. He had a few years working, particularly with the MotoGP rider Ben Spies, or Spies, Spies, I think you pronounce it. And and so it's for hospitality, the second bus. It's where their VIPs are housed.
This is a dangerous precedent, isn't it? You can just, as soon as these things happen, you think in 5 years, every team will have 2 buses. Dave Brailsford will know that I'll be watching, although I'm not sure if it was a performance bus as opposed to a hospitality bus, I think he might be more interested.
I think Sky would have a performance bus and a hospitality bus.
3 buses.
Yeah, the bird is a friendly little fellow, isn't he? He posed for a photograph. I'll put the photo on the Cycling Podcast Instagram and Twitter feeds overnight so everyone can have a look at the smiley bird. I suppose, I mean, without getting into controversial areas, just refer people back to our episode earlier this year where we talked about the ethical nature of each of the team sponsors. Can't go into Bahrain's regime and so on here now, but if you want to look at the Amnesty International report,
we've got enough lawsuits to deal with already. We've got the happy birthday one, we've got the Jaws one.
Yeah, the bird, it's a nice idea, but I mean, it wouldn't get a job on Sesame Street, would it? So
anyway, like, never mind the bird. In a minute, I want to know what you're particularly looking forward to over the next couple of weeks, because I've got you, you're my travelling companion for pretty much the first 2 weeks, and then we've got the Buffalo coming back in for the finale. But before that, I asked this question of Mauro Vegni, the Giro director. I'm thinking particularly about the route, and is there anything on this year's Giro route that we should particularly be looking out for?
Ce ne sono 3 o 4, consentimi.
There are 3 or 4 things I just can't wait to see, because they partly sum up what I wanted to say with this Giro route. Sardinia is definitely the first big highlight. I just can't wait to see it. It's an unbelievable place, just magnificent, with incredible beaches, incredible sea, all the ingredients of the best Italian landscapes. Without trying to rank them, and bearing in mind that everyone's tastes are different, there are other stages I'm looking forward to, not for me, but because I just want to show people how beautiful Italy is. That's what I'm mainly thinking about. Not what I'm excited about, but what the viewing public are going to see. The stage to Alberobello definitely falls into this category. I consider that part of Italy to be one of the most fantastic, extraordinary places anywhere. Anatolia in Turkey had the same impact on me. The springs and travertine terraces at Pamukkale. You see those and you're just speechless, stunned. Well, Alberobello and its conical houses, the Trulli, are like that. I think it's a place that we Italians should be proud of showing off to the rest of the world. Then, obviously, I'm looking forward to the Stelvio stage with the Mortirolo, because a lot of legendary exploits in Giro history have taken place on those mountains. So there's a bit of everything in what I'm looking forward to. There's what I'm excited about on a sporting level, and then in terms of telling this country's story. C'è un aspettare sportivo e c'è
un aspettare di narrazione di un paese.
So there you go, Lionel. Mauro Vegni is particularly excited about the state of Alberobello, these conical houses that they have in Puglia. So that's the hill, the far south east of Italy. So we go there, I think, on stage 7. What about you, Lionel? Anything catch your eye particularly on the route, or what have you made so far of Sardinia?
Oh, I think Sardinia's lovely. I mean, we came across on that road, didn't we, that basically taken us across the island yesterday, and then today we've headed south, and it's rocky and rugged and it is hilly. But it's not out and out mountainous, is it? It looks very appealing. And, I mean, this village here is absolutely stunning. I imagine, you know, it's going to be quite raucous here all evening. But what I like most about...
Raucous by the standards of someone who lives in Watford. I wouldn't say raucous was the right word.
As I don't live in Watford, that anecdote doesn't... That comeback doesn't work, but... This is pretty happening compared to where I live. Yeah. What I'm looking forward to most is just the changing landscape. That was what I was struck by most last year as we went from south to north. And we're taking the same sort of journey this year, aren't we, from Calabria. And then we're hugging the coastline a bit more this time, so that'll be good. And then up the middle. And I think just seeing Italy change. And it changes like sort of... You know, layers of sand in one of those things you used to get in the Natural History Museum. Do you know what I mean? Like you sort of, the architecture changes a bit. It tidies up a bit, smartens up a bit as you get further north. And really, though, what I'm most looking forward to is the evening meal and your restaurant recommendations.
Well, we've had some belting food already, haven't
already,
we?
Already, already. I'm also looking forward to Etna, actually, because I leave the day after Etna. I'm coming back, as you say, the final week. But I've been up Etna... on holiday, so I know it fairly well. I wonder if, you know, it feels like it's been quite a low-key start, and you were teasing out some of them, the possible reasons for that. Could be that some of them are nervous about such a big mountain stage so early in the race, and coming in the day after a rest day as well, which is always interesting. Etna's going to be fascinating just to see where people are at. There might not be much happen there. There might not be fireworks, as it were, but...
There might not be an eruption on Etna.
I think that's what I was trying to say. Just having it there looming is perhaps, to some extent, dictating the racing that we've seen, at least so far, because, you know, a bit like the Tour de France last year, it has felt fairly low-key to start with. But anyway, we should wrap things up. We need to go and find dinner tonight.
Let's go.
Let's go. Thank you very much, Lionel.
Thank you, Richard.
Thank you, Daniel.
Thank you, chaps.